Right, welcome back to Ride On. I have with me the OGs of the Micromobility Podcast, the two gentlemen that started out on this podcast we're all listening to now. It is with great pleasure to welcome to Ride On both Horace Dedieu and Oliver Bruce.
How you doing?
Welcome back, guys.
Hey, yeah. Guys.
Pleasure to be back.
Good.
This is, I feel like I'm walking on hallowed ground here trying to be the host and taking the reins from the first two ever hosts of this show. So it's great to have you both back on. Today, we want to discuss the news from last week about Apple potentially exiting the mobility market and what that looks like and what that means from history and what that may mean for the future of mobility, the future of so much of the technology that we are all hoping for in mobility. So we gotta jump right in because we've got basically 50 minutes here of an action-packed conversation. Before we do that, though, is there anything, Horace or Oliver, you'd like to cover that's not going to be about Apple today?
I think we'll get into the Vision Pro somehow, but it is part of Apple. But I think let's stick with that because it's a long story. It's a 10-year-old almost. It was 2014, I think, that it all began. So there's plenty of things to cover there.
Yeah. No, I've got nothing else to add. I'm excited to be back. It's lovely to see you guys.
Yeah, for sure. Same. So Mark Rubin last week at Bloomberg announced that Apple was pulling their, I think always rumored, but pretty out there rumor that they were building a car. Grumman's been right about a lot of things, and it seems like based on the other reporting, he's right about this as well. Forrest, I think just to start with you, what does this mean? What does this mean for Apple? What does this mean for mobility?
Right.
Is this below? Is this great? Yeah.
So I take one issue with your initial opening comment, which is that you said Apple's exiting mobility. We are only probably certain that Apple is exiting the car industry. We don't know what other mobility plans they may have. Certainly they are in the car already and with their software, with CarPlay, and that is supposed to evolve to the point where it almost dominates the entire dashboard, and that we'll see how that develops. But so I don't think they're exiting mobility per se, and I think we can even talk them into being a part of micromobility. I think there's a potential there now that they maybe have abandoned anything to do with macromobility or automobility. Now, to step back to history a little bit, like I said, this started a long time ago, and I think it started at a time when the birth of both electric and self-driving were just going to clearly be scaling upward, and I'm sure they didn't want to miss that boat. And keep in mind, Tesla, by the way, is about 20 years old, so I think they were starting around 2004, so by then they were already 10 years in. Apple's thinking, okay, we got to be part of this somehow. It might give us a software-enabled vehicle. It might enable us to add value. But don't forget that the criteria Apple always had was make a significant contribution, control the key elements, and be profitable doing it. And honestly, in retrospect, I lost faith in that vision of a smart car. More than 5 years ago when we started micromobility, because I thought you just couldn't get there from here. You couldn't get to a smart transportation system exclusively with an automobile. Maybe it's part of the story, but it's basically difficult to evolve and slow to emerge and all those other things. And we're seeing now 10 years on, they're pulling the plug, something they should have done a long time ago, I think. And the other thing is that I think it's predicated on there being a revolution in the way you drive, and the revolution being, of course, self-driving. And that hype was very evident back in 10 years ago. And even Tesla was pretty much defined by this. I mean, it was like Elon Musk said, if it wasn't for self-driving, Tesla wouldn't be worth much or anything even. So there was a lot of belief in that. And I think those hopes have been dashed to some degree. Now, that's not to say, again, we're not going to emerge into a plateau of productivity, but we're now very much in the trough of disillusionment with respect to self-driving, and especially personal self-driving or vehicles that you own that are self-driving versus a service. Waymo is different. Waymo is a service, and that logic makes sense to you know, meter it out and charge on a pay-as-you-go basis. But as far as paying and for your own car to drive you around and sit idle the 96% of the time, it seems like a waste. Anyway, so I think Apple finally did the math. I mean, they abandoned many things along the way before finally pulling the plug. And by the way, I do not think it's just a rumor, because what's being cited is a internal meeting and an internal, reorg that a lot of people were witness to. So I don't think it's all that speculative. So I'm happy to dig into this, but I think fundamentally there are a lot of things against automobility that Apple came to realize a bit late, and they've kind of said, we cannot salvage this and we cannot make a business out of this. And I think that's a good thing, because they'll focus more on CarPlay and they'll focus more potentially on emergent form factors like we talk about in Micro. And then we'll see. I'd like to personally convince them of it myself, but it was hard to hear that message.
Mm. Yeah. The one thing that I think is probably valuable here is for you to talk through the narrative that you started with on a sim car, and where we got to micromobility around why are automobiles so hard to shift, and why is it so hard to do a significant contribution? In other words, for Apple to meet their own internal guidelines of how they work.
Actually, it started partly because I visited with Gordon Murray, and Gordon Murray had since 2008, so even earlier, much earlier, proposed this idea that we could redesign how cars are made using, instead of stamped sheet metal, we could be using a tubular frames with composites. And this is what makes for lightness. It what makes for low volume production. It's what actually makes race cars so fast. And so it was a new architecture for the actual body of the vehicle. And I found that fascinating. I said, this will change manufacturing. Manufacturing is so much based on sheet metal. But that itself led me to think, well, if you do those things, why do you need to be a car in the first place? So you could think about, okay, smaller form factors and so on. And that led me eventually to micromobility, and you added all the business model stuff into it. Now, I am aware, and now maybe it's fair to say that conversation with Gordon Murray was also Apple's teams had talked to him. He wouldn't tell me at the time. But I'm sure that they visited with them. They also visited BMW and the i3, which is carbon fiber. And they talked to a lot of people about production innovation. And I think the bottom line is that you can fix one thing in the automotive system, but then you realize it leads to other things. It leads to other dependencies. And you're not, you know, you have to build everything differently. So everything from selling things to maintaining them, supporting them, and so on. And it just seems like you're always trying to fix something that's bigger than what you can fix. And I 2014, there was a lot of optimism, idealism, a green future, all those things, and then with self-driving, all that, and now. Now it seems like it was just too far, too hard to do.
So let's talk about that, Horace, because I think this gets so much at what I think we've always heard from you and always been inspired by, going back, you know, almost 20 years now, and with your Apple analysis. Like, is it so? On the same week that we had Apple's shutdown, we had the expansion of Waymo in California.
Yeah.
Into the second largest market in the U.S. in Los Angeles, and then to, you know, one of the most kind of biggest corridors of cars, and going from San Francisco to the peninsula, basically to Silicon Valley. So, you know, in a romantic way, you're seeing two divergent systems. And you mentioned clearly what Waymo is doing as a service is different than, I think, ultimately Apple's intention, but maybe ultimately the same outcome, which is to put compute in charge of automobility. And you know, you're what I think I hear you saying a lot is there are so many dependencies. This is such a complex problem that is this ultimately a problem that just was too big for Apple? And has that ever been the case before?
For us, it's not in their wheelhouse. The problem is this. So I love the Waymo phrase, which I heard from their CEO long ago, which was like, we don't build cars, we build drivers. They just happen not to be human drivers. Yep. So the idea of creating a driver is an interesting idea. It's a great idea. But Apple is not in the business of creating drivers.
Right.
I remember once positing the idea was Apple should add a service called it Apple Go. I called it Apple Go. Like you have Apple One and you have Apple Music and everything is very simple, right? So what is Apple Go? Apple Go means you lift your phone, you ask Siri or you poke on an icon and it says, I want a car now, or I want it here, and I want it to go somewhere. So this is very much Uber's logic, but in this case, it would be a service that you prepay at $350 a month or something like that. And it, you know, you have this reliable source of rides. But again, this is not what Apple's good at, because that's operationally very, very heavy lift. You have build a car, then you have to build a service, and you have to maintain everything and get permits and all that other stuff that Waymo is doing. So Apple could not do what Waymo is doing. I think fundamentally they said, if we make a car, it's going to be a very nice $100,000 car, which will maybe have a nice feature about it, which is the self-driving. And as a result, you get to engage with our services inside the car while it's going around. And it's just not what Apple does is solve five things at once. It doesn't do that, and it gets into services like over a decades long process, and then it's just basically start with storage, then do music, then do video, then improve, you know, then figure out exercise, then figure out health and this and that. So they do these things very incrementally, but driving was going to be a huge mountain to climb. And not only that, but I think the core technologies that they needed to control were not coming together. The idea of self-driving at level 5 was going to take a much longer time. In level 4, just I think what Waymo is, which is a constrained environment, like, okay, this is your region. But then you're buying territory. Then you're dealing with regulation. And then we're back to this whole question of like, okay, incrementalism in that world means nail it on this region, move to the next, expand as you can, burn a lot of money in the process, and maybe profitability comes at the end. Not Apple's way. They got to be profitable in day one. You know, like the Vision Pro, $3,500. Why? Because they can profit at that level. And so it's got to be $100,000 for the vehicle. So if it's $100,000 for the vehicle, how many people will buy it? The taxi makes sense. You know, a lot of things though. Even, you know, you can argue the same thing with Tesla. I mean, Tesla also promised a taxi fleet, or you own your car, and then if you're not using it, you lend it out to the cloud to figure out what to do with it. But that didn't come through, not yet anyway. So it's about the timing is everything, but it's also that the thing that they dreamt of building could not materialize in a timely fashion, and it just didn't come together. That's, you know, I think they gave it a shot. They gave it a lot of shots, actually.
Yeah. And so maybe let's talk really quickly, and I want to get Oliver's opinion too, but so I agree with you. They gave it a lot of shots. And if I go back and I look at some of the reporting over the years, Tim Cook has said a couple of things. One, he said that ultimately their auto project, their car project, was the ultimate expression of AI. I think in 2017, he said, self-driving is the ultimate AI challenge, and you know, something clear that I think they were hinting at wanting to solve.
Yeah.
As well, Tim Cook has said, my legacy will be in health and the ability for Apple to reinvent what it means that, you know, how companies like Apple could help with health. Tim Cook has probably got maybe 6 to 7 more years to handle, right, based on his age, and I think he said he would go until 2028 roughly or so. Or yeah, so maybe he's got 4 to 6 years left. if I'm just being, and again, I need to declare I've followed you forever horse. I've been an Apple fanboy since for 20 years. I would say last week was probably the most disappointing week I've ever had as an Apple fan.
Mm.
Yes, because I thought they were admitting to two things. One, I thought they were admitting to, we are way behind on AI. And I realize that's hard to say because there's just so much that potentially they can say. But I think there are some real indications that they don't have potentially what other companies have in that world. And two, I don't know what Tim Cook means by health. I think he might, you know, again, I have the AFib on my watch and things like that. But, you know, could he save 40,000 American lives a year with a better car? Absolutely, I think, you know. And again, you see it with Waymo's. You know, the micromobility team was in Tempe last week with electric bikes and riding around with their some really cool stuff that they have going on. And there's Waymo cars all over the place. And that's the safest you ever feel on the road is when those Waymo cars are next to you in the bike lane. So I think, like, is this a very, I know we talk a lot about, is this, you know, in the post-Jobs world, can Apple survive? But I think this is the best expression I've seen of Apple not being able to execute in an area where they have clearly have said for many years they need to execute. So how do you...
I would not agree with that, because I would have said to them 5 years ago to do what they just did. I don't think they should have been in the car business 5 years ago, because I thought that the way forward was micromobility, and I still do, because I don't think that getting to the level of autonomy necessary for them to make a contribution, as I said, that's going to have to be left to the service provider. It's not a device problem. It's a service problem, which would, you know, in infrastructure and legislation and regulation and insurance and all those hairy problems have to be dealt with if you're going to go that route. And I think that Apple should have pulled the plug earlier to focus on the software and cars, which is, I think, what they are going to do, but not make the whole thing. Now, that may be impossible, because then, you know, automakers may just block them from entering the devices or their devices. But here's where I'm not. Also, I don't share your pessimism with respect to AI. I think, and I've said this privately before, I cannot think of a company that will make more money from AI than Apple. Apple is going to be killing it on AI. Why? Number one, because they're going to charge a ton of money for it. Gene Munster is out with a note today saying they're going to be $10 a month for personal AI. Nobody else is touching that. That's 1.4 billion people potential addressable right there, and that's growing. Why would they be able to charge for AI? Because they're going to charge for privacy. They're going to say, this is yours and only yours. This is a private concierge, whatever. Siri on steroids. Name it what you will, but they'll figure it out as a private local service at the edge. And I think the other great business model is Microsoft's. But, you know, if you look at the story 10 years ago, everybody who said it was Google is going to clean up on Apple because they're, you know, cheap iPhone alternatives, better at services, yada, yada. Now, actually, Google isn't. And then if there's one company I would definitely say is going to suffer from AI the most, it's Google, who invented large language models. Talk about, you know, irony there. Anyway, so I'm not pessimistic on Apple as far as that. And by the way, being behind, they have silicon, they can make their own NVIDIA in-house. They have access to data, 2.2 billion devices, all of them are collecting information, and they're connected to the internet and to the cloud. So I think and Apple's typically not going to say anything until they deliver something. And the interface of this new Vision product is just mind-blowing. It's like connected right into your retina. And it's delivering an artificial world already, and most of it enabled through AI. When you understand that how much is going on in terms of synthesis of reality there already, you can see how adding generative to that synthesis will make mind-blowing experiences. So it's not that you're going to look at the desert as you do now as an environment and you want to be in the mountains or you want to be in the lakes or you want to be in some faraway place and that's your workspace. But imagine that's a generative AI space that is actually tuned to your personal tastes. So it's filled with fantastical creatures that only you've imagined. Now that's mind blowing stuff, and they're the ones to deliver on this. So don't be pessimistic. I know you've been a long term, as you say, fanboy, but keep the faith. The announcements will speak for themselves. Here's the thing to worry. If you have a technology that's disruptive, it means that Apple will sort of be allergic to it. They're going to say, nah, this doesn't make sense. Actually, the car is in many ways an allergic reaction. They couldn't absorb it. The antibodies could eat it. The thing is, with as far as AI, they're not running away from it. If anything, they're trying to run as fast as they can toward it. And it's sustaining to them. It's 100% sustaining. And that's one way to think about it. Is it something that, so the reason why I say Google is potentially disruptive is because if you look at it, it's like, would I want to type a search into a search box and then assemble the results in my head to figure out what is the right answer? That's a DIY model. Instead, I would have a very intelligent agent answering exactly my question, maybe interpreting it even better than I could state it. And then it would deliver my results. Now, that sort of thing is very disruptive to Google, which is a search engine. And by the way, how do you put ads in this in results from an AI? You would have to sort of sprinkle ads, product placement. Does anybody know how that might happen? And by the way, that's 95% of the revenue for Google. Mm. If nobody, or Facebook, if nobody can figure out advertising plus AI, then, or whoever does, let's put it this way, whoever does is going to be the one that makes the next few trillion. Would these guys say, well, let's sacrifice our core businesses in order to figure that out? To what extent are they willing to put a bullet in search or a bullet in social in order to figure that out? Apple doesn't have to put a bullet in anything. Apple could just make a cooler iPhone or cooler Vision, a cooler Mac. It's just for them. It's just cream. I mean, it's just, sorry. That's my interview.
Thank you. I mean, there's a lot to
talk about.
Oliver.
Yeah. So the way that I've always thought about the car and the mobility play has been that, if you look at how Apple builds stuff, they end up with like owning the value that they create relative to the value of the product is really highly captured, right? Like Horace, you always talk about it, which is like Apple captures the majority of the profits in the cell phone industry or in the computer industry. And if you look at like a car, there's just a huge amount of extra stuff where there's a whole bunch of value that they have to, a car is a $30,000 or $50,000 thing to make. There's a whole bunch of steel in there where they cannot make any real, like they can't do any incremental value on it. So the only part that's like the interesting source that Apple would be able to capture is like maybe some interesting software, maybe some autonomy. And you could argue that they're obviously, they haven't been able to play correctly in that game. So the marginal amount of extra value that they would be able to create, I think, has always been low relative to the cost that someone was going to have to pay for this vehicle, right? And versus something like an Apple Pro, where it's like, hey, this is all our tech stack and we can capture all $3,500 because it's like everything was ours. And that there's very, very, very minimal material inputs to be able to make that thing. So, like, I'm in agreement that it was always dumb. I'm with you, Horace. Obviously, 5 years ago, I think they should have got rid of it. Interestingly, that's the argument for, I think, something like Micro for them, is just that they will capture more. The material inputs will be a lot smaller, but they will be able to do a lot more with the tech and the value that they'll be able to create on a smaller vehicle.
Yeah,
there's the question of how can they capture that value, right? Like,
Or even heavy micro, like something like a Lit Motors or something that's clever, something that's small, not necessarily a bicycle, but something that is safe, that is software enabled. All those things that makes a lot more sense for them to design something around it. Which is, I don't think that's why I said I don't think they're going to necessarily mobility in general. I think maybe they'll dust off and then rethink about it, and maybe we can convince them to look at micro in a way. And I do believe, and as I've always said, that this vision product, if it goes outdoors, it's going to be a great interface for micro, which is the way they might play it. Actually, it's sort of a smart helmet. But I wouldn't write off Apple. There's a lot of stuff that's come and gone over the last few years, crypto and other things, which not gone. I'm just saying that Papple didn't have a play in, and it didn't matter all that much for them and their core business. They're still driving at growing their user base. And anyway, it's an interesting lens. I always say Apple's an interesting lens with which to look at many other things. So one of the things we're looking at now is mobility and the future of transportation. The Apple experience there has been one where they decided to finally say no to the vehicle, and that's fine. But mobility isn't just vehicle. It's mobility services, mobility software. And we're just down, you know, down that road, and was a dead end for them. Now moving on. I think if not Apple, another way to ask is, if not Apple, then who? You know, I think the car industry is still facing an existential crisis where there's no clear evolutionary, you know, path there that says, well, these things are going to be good enough for the next few billion people. You know, as I said before, they're just getting bloated, and they're getting gigantic, and they're getting more expensive instead of cheaper. So that's not all going in the right direction. And and that was
how did we think about market sizing? So one, I always appreciated, I remember you started to do this in like 2012, you know, maybe Apple was approaching like a $400 billion market cap, and you were saying, you know, a lot of the analysts were saying, hey, this is getting a little big. What could the total TAM size be? And this idea of the law of large numbers, which I remember you had this podcast where you said, there's no such thing as the law of large numbers. That's just what people say. But looking at Apple today, in terms of market sizing, I don't want to discount how big the transportation sector is as it relates to the largest markets in the world and the potential impact. You know, at some point, these companies do need to go after, because they are approaching sizes where they have to play in the largest market.
I mean, that was my understanding of why you did a SIM card, right? Like, you were looking at, like, what's a market that's big enough that they could do after the iPhone?
Absolutely. So here's some numbers for you guys. So the phone business is addressing 6 billion people. The car business is addressing 1.2 billion people. However, the cycle of that product is 4 years for phones at most, typically, but it's 15 years for cars. And that's if you're a new car maker and you want to look at, you know, replacing that fleet, even 15 is probably on the low side. The problem then, if you look at ASP, obviously pricing of a phone, it's going up, but it is far lower than a car, right? Couple of zeros off. But then you boil that into margins, you boil that into the revenue opportunity, and you boil that into the let's say market share you're able to obtain. Obviously, out of phones, you're maybe getting 20-30%. I don't know what they could get out of cars. Even Toyota has got pretty small market share compared to the whole industry. But if I did this, like, I would say Toyota is getting about $120 billion of enterprise value out of being the number one car maker in the world. That's $120 billion. It's not much. Apple is getting $1.6 trillion of market cap out of the iPhone business. Now, if you were to look at micro, of course, we're not on that scale at all. But the idea is, yeah, there's probably 10% of the phone business if you were number one in the car business today. So it doesn't work so well because of these other factors. The gross margin, as you pointed out, there's not much value add. Two, it's the longevity of the product and its ability, your need to support it for so many years, and the fact that it doesn't turn over that often. And the TAM is not that high unless you're going to 6 billion people. The 1.2 billion cars out there is not growing very fast. So it's like you have to look at it from all these angles. And then when you see the opportunities of, let's say, tablets or wearables, they're actually more attractive than even the car industry. Tablets alone are worth more. If you say the iPad is worth more than Toyota.
Yeah, that's fair. It's in the existing industry, right? Clearly, like, you know, the rotary phone business wasn't very big before Apple completely reinvented it. And I think that's...
But to make the car industry worth twice as much, either you're going to half the cycle time. So you say cars are going to last only 8 years, but you're still going to spend $30,000-$50,000 on each one. or you increase the price of the car. Well, you're going to go, what, 30, 50, 60, whatever. I you know, that's happening, but not for everyone. And so the problem is, I get you, but I think that the to my way of thinking about the vision of the car industry, it's not to be with cars anymore. We've got to think outside of that box, literally, and think about, you know, can we get billions of vehicles that are indeed just like iPhones, 6 billion addressable, 4 year life cycle, with pricing at $300 to $500. That would be interesting. That would be like the iPhone business, but you've got to get those margins and you've got to get that distribution figured out. So that's why I've been on Micro for a while. So again, Apple probably sees it. And I think the reason they wouldn't get into it is like, we can't contribute very much to this. It seems a commodity. So even if there are 6 billion micro vehicles, I think they probably think that they're all going to be very, very low margin and undifferentiated. So what we have to figure out is what is the differentiation there?
Well, wouldn't you argue that actually Apple's market is exactly the car market, and that 1.2 billion cars is exactly probably the ICP of the Apple buyer? Like, Apple's not going to break out of that roughly 1.2 billion people, because that's not at a margin they're going to do
business. That is their audience. But again, they don't have one iPhone for every car owner, but their audience are the top quintiles, the top 20% of income earners. And that is about 1.4 billion people right now. But at the same time, again, it's not that they're all true things. It's just that it's not a great business, in my opinion, to be a part of unless you can really redefine what it is. And I couldn't find a way to redefine it unless it's self-driving right now. And that is not happening. So self-driving, unfortunately, isn't going fast enough.
Well, you changed the geometry, right? So in other words,
that's where I went. Like, the pressure was like, instead of trying to make it into a better car, as I say, let's make a worse car. And a worse car means make it a stand alongside the car if you are already a car owner. So get you another smaller, you know, garage fitting product. By the way, I heard, and this is not or even a rumor, but Lucid is making or considering micromobility, not as a standalone product line necessarily, but something that plugs into physically their other vehicles. So you have a mounting point for your e-bike so that you can take it off or whatever it turns out to be. But they've looked at two-wheelers. And this is, again, as a companion.
Yeah, I mean, Rivian, you got this as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my understanding. So the point is that you have to think of it as an accessory product to the vehicle. But it's to me the story of Apple is more of just not fitting with their DNA, and also like the timing in the market not being there. Even though, yes, obviously when they started out, they looked at it and said $100,000 car is probably going to be easily, we can get to 50,000 in the year one, and can get to 100,000 year two, etc. The way sort of the way Tesla went. I'm sure. Yeah, the reality.
I have a question about this, Horace, because, like, you know, they've been trying for what, 10 years, and as you say, they couldn't kill it. They should have killed it 5 years ago, but they didn't. And I'm curious about what was it internally. What does it tell us about what's going on with Apple internally that they wouldn't be able to kill a project like this?
Well, you know, the names have been put out there. You know, there was a gentleman by the name of Zadesky. Then there was a Doug Field, and there was Ritchie. Then I don't know who Mansfield. All these names have been put forward as working on it to some degree, and they've all cycled out over the years. And every time one left, everybody said it's over, but it actually kind of kept going. And I think they pivoted each time. At one point, maybe they had 8,000 people, and at last count, supposedly 2,000 are now being kind of reassigned or let go. What it means about their process is, I think they handled it internally as the way typically Apple does things is they say, I'll tell you the story of Safari. Safari was built by Steve Jobs by hiring someone to do version one. And it was just one person at first. And he hired another person. And then they did a demo, you know, and the demo is based on open source or something they could grab quickly and demo. And then based on that demo, they got a budget for three more people and so on and so on. So it was very much incremental, and you have to show progress in order to move forward. The problem with the car, again, this is another thing that actually maybe should have signaled to Apple that they shouldn't be doing this. If you need 8,000 people to work even on a pre-prototype, that is not the Apple way. That is something that is outrageously expensive. Billions and billions have been spent. You're building entire facilities to try to prototype stuff, keep it all secret. Then you got to go on the road and gather all this data with your own cars and all these sensors on top. And everybody's looking at these vehicles and asking questions. Again, you can't keep a secret this way. Not with 8,000 people, not with vehicles on the road. Then all the rumors that they would work with Foxconn, that they would work with Magna International, that makes you know does building for others. And so it's just not the Apple way to do a car. Doing a car is not the Apple way in any way. And that's another reason I think that they kind of this wasn't a match made in heaven. And
So what I think, Oliver, also the idea is I think as Apple you have to be concerned that. You know, everyone knows Marchetti's constant, right? Or she talks so much about that. Like the idea that you're going to lose the consumer for, you know, again, that 1.2 billion is exactly the Apple demographic. You're going to lose them for an hour a day to screens that another service provider could offer. You know, you got to sleep 8 hours a day. You know, you're really going to be on your phone, and compute. Like, wouldn't you, I would assume that's a big reason to think about, like, we ultimately, these are just screens, right? And that's an hour a day of screens.
If that driver is using CarPlay, they're going to be on an Apple screen. If that driver is a passenger in a self-driving car, they're going to whip out their iPhone. I think that BMW screen or that Tesla screen is going to show Apple pixels, or people are not going to look at it. I think that's how Apple thinks now. It's a very expensive screen if it's $50 or $100,000 just to grab someone's attention. I think Apple's already owning that.
Well, let's talk about that. There's increasing rumors that most auto manufacturers are going to rip CarPlay out. They're not going to allow it. They're going to go with their own systems, as terrible as they seem. Which, again, if I'm going to knock Apple, I'm not very impressed by CarPlay. It's dangerous. It looks like Windows 95. Like it's not an impressive piece of technology. It's just the incumbent, and we're used to it, so we use it. Oliver, I know you have a Tesla. I know a lot of Tesla owners find the Tesla to be better than CarPlay. Like, where do you see CarPlay going, Oris? Or is this the AVP moment where actually the biggest use case is the hour a day of your car? Clearly, everyone's saying it's the flight, but you don't take flights every day. You are in your car every day.
No.
Do you see?
Well, CarPlay is evolving. It's not the static version, although it does move on much more slowly, and that's part of the problem we have with trying to support hundreds of vehicles, each of which has probably dozens of variants, and so you have this management problem. That's why they go to CarPlay 2, and that's after 7 years or so of CarPlay. That's symptomatic of the whole industry. I'm not sure that Tesla's. I have no idea. Maybe Oliver, you can tell me if it's better than CarPlay. But I do know that 70% to 80% of people who buy new cars are asking for CarPlay, or it's a no deal. Now, if an automaker like GM wants to rip it out, good luck. What do they do with 70% of the audience? And I think at the end of the day, people will just work around it. It's not something you'll put up with. And version one certainly didn't look very good. I actually don't even own a car that has CarPlay in it, and I'm happy just using my phone as a thing you look at. Most people, and we're talking about slow cycle time. Most people are still using their phones, and they still are happy with CarPlay. And you're looking at long cycle times before that cycles out. Even if it was going to cycle out, and Apple is going to by then be looking at version 5 of the Vision Pro, holographic, whatever. The smartest thing in your car is your phone, and that is true for 95% of the cars out there probably, and the car's not going to get smarter faster than the phone's going to get smarter, or the vision's going to get smarter, or the tablet's going to get smarter. Those things are very, very rapid. And so the problem with cars in general is that, like I said before, the faster it goes, the slower it goes. It is not evolving enough for it to stay up with the latest technologies in displays, in CPUs. Early Teslas, which are now how many years old? I don't know. They had a very early CPU, and you know, they still have to support that. I asked this question once. I said, okay, let's say Qualcomm. Qualcomm wants to be in the car business. Okay, which engineer at Qualcomm in 2045 will be happy supporting a processor built in 2020, which is probably the generation that they're going to have to deal with? We're dealing with 30-year-old technology that still needs to be supported in the field and has to have software updates. Otherwise, you're going to brick that car. And you want to really brick an $80,000 car after 4 years? Who's going to be happy with the depreciation rate on a vehicle of $20,000 a year, at least? You know, all these things don't add up with cars. I've just looked at it from many ways.
Ultimately, right? Like, and this kind of brings us back to Waymo. Like, I think that's the business of Waymo. I think those cars will be 4 year cycled cars because they'll be doing 100,000, 200,000 miles a year.
Taxi business is well known. I looked at the economics. You got a car that runs 400,000 or 500,000 miles until it's worn out. It gets recycled. Yep. Another one gets in the field, and that's normal. But you got to get, you know, 100K a year out of the car, and then you can depreciate it accordingly. And that means also the software. And that means, yes, Waymo's model can serve, you know, as an intelligent product. But a car that you buy that you don't use 96% of the time, and then you somehow, you know, 4 years later, you're going to trade it in, and that sucker who buys it is going to be stuck with a brick if something goes wrong. I don't see that. You know,
okay, so let's play this out a little bit. Let's just pull on the thread, right, as thinking about the future. So a couple of things you've said, Horace, and Oliver, too. Like, one, Waymo didn't fix the car, it fixed the driver. And then, Horace, you said the smartest thing in the car is the phone. In the future, again, if you're part of this $1.2 billion class that uses cars, you have the type of, probably can afford potentially a Waymo. Let's just say the economics work out. Now I no longer have to drive. I've got a driver. And potentially, is the smartest thing in my car still my phone? If I'm in a Waymo car, that's clearly a very intelligent product. And is that a disruptive entry point?
Great question.
Into this world.
During that ride, which is no more than 1 hour a day on average, now you'll have half hour days and 2 hour days, but on average, about an hour a day, would you be inclined to, you know, have the screens pop out and engage with them, or are you going to just take your phone out and the car will be Spartan? The car will have nothing but a seat and the floor. That is probably my bet was, especially, by the way, if maybe price comes into the picture. Now, one way to sell technology is to say, hey, if you use our systems in the car, your subscription to Waymo is going to go from $500 to $300. Maybe some people will take that and say, for $200 less, I'll consume your media. I'll make myself available to your advertising or whatnot. Tough call. On the other hand, you know, maybe that's just not going to pay off, and then you just whip out your phone. I think put on your vision. My bet it here's the phrase. Self-driving is amazing. When you get in a car like a Waymo, people say it is jaw-dropping for the first 5 minutes. And after that, it's the most boring thing in the world. Sure. After that, it's like, what the hell am I going to do? Okay, there's no driver. You get used to it. So then you whip out your phone. So that's like sitting in a car or a train or, in a taxi or a train or a plane. Mm-hmm. Wonders about the magic of flight, the beauty of the fact that you're in the stratosphere and you're almost looking at the Earth through the eyes of extraterrestrial. Well, nobody cares. Slide that visor down and pop open your laptop. That's what people do on planes. So it's, or watch the movie in front of you. So how many people, here's the other thing. Okay, let's talk about that for a second, this car, this in-flight experience. People do watch the movies. People are addicted to the movies now. On every seat back has a TV screen, right? So that's maybe the logic. But if you had one of these vision things, you will not be watching that screen. I guarantee you.
So this is a concession, maybe. It's Apple has lost in mobility and self-driving. And the loss is countered by the idea that we're still going to own the screen because we're going to glue it to your eyes.
Yeah, I would say the way to spin that is that they lost the 1 hour a day by delivering it as a service that is monetized for the utility of transporting people, and are betting that you're just going to turn to their device anyway because they're going to do a better job and it'll be faster upgrading it and more compelling than whatever's in front of you inside that 1 hour. So yeah, they may have lost that hour. That's all it's all about, right? The 1 hour day out of 24 that's up for grabs, and the question is, who gets it? The argument would be that no matter who builds the vehicle or the service, Apple will intercept those eyeballs by putting some screen in front of them that they control. That's yes. Their bet at this point.
Okay, I buy that. And then I want to bring it back to one final point that I made, and I want Oliver to be able to chime in too. But let's go back to health. Let's go back to Cook's legacy, right? The entire Apple is built on Jobs' legacy. Cook has a legacy too. We all, and bring it back to micro, I ride every day. I know you guys ride every day too. The most dangerous thing I see on the road is people on their iPhones, right? And it's everywhere. It's rampant. It's like if you were to go to a diner in the 50s and everyone's smoking and it just seems so crazy. Like, that's what you see on the phone now, is people literally with these death screens in their hands. And again, pedestrian deaths are up, bike deaths are up. What is Apple's responsibility in mobility? They have the data. They know the collisions that are happening. Now, of course, they're coming out with things that are like, once you get in the collision, we'll call the authorities.
Well, we'll summon.
They are not, in my opinion, and again, I hate to be attacked from them, but like, if this is Cook's legacy, now we're abandoning potentially the car, the entire project. We're going to put screens in front of our eyes. What responsibility does Apple have for us in mobility, to micromobility, to the broader mobility space, where we know their devices are causing a lot of deaths on the road?
Let me turn this around, because when I spoke to some veterans of Apple and I asked them, why isn't Apple in micro? They said, well, I suspect, and this is, again, veterans, they didn't know for sure because they were out at the time. And they said, the suspicion was that putting their name on a vehicle that might cause an accident or might be involved in an accident is going to mean Apple has burned a child to death. Apple has committed this crime of delivering death and destruction. Now, you're blaming it on this on the fact that maybe people are using Apple devices and getting distracted, but that doesn't stick, right? That doesn't stick to Apple. What would stick to Apple would be that vehicle they were in, killed children. And by the way, you know, maybe that doesn't stick to Tesla and it doesn't stick to GM, but it does and would stick to Apple. That's their point, because if
I disagree. It stuck to GM. I mean, have you seen what GM's done with their cruise business? They've just like, it crashed into one person, pulled over to the side of the road with the person stuck in.
Saying, but all the people that are dying in GM cars, just, you know, normal driving, not just driving.
Sure.
I'm just thinking that even if it's a non-self-driving Apple car, people are going to talk about how many people have died in an Apple car. Because this was the thing I point out that you know, we had AntennaGate, so if Apple makes a mistake with their phones, they get slammed. But if literally every Samsung's Galaxy explodes and is banned from aircraft, it does nothing to Samsung brand. This is the way Apple is treated because it is such an important brand and it's worth so much, and it's somewhat considered very fragile. So for that reason, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here. I don't know for sure, but this is what I heard. So Apple did not want to compromise its brand. It did not want to endanger its brand by putting it on a mobility vehicle. Now, software and devices in the car, that's a different story. Now, so having said that, yeah, let's go back to Cook's legacy. Now, they are getting positive headlines for every time someone is saved from an accident or something. It actually is free advertising, and it's very compelling because people are like, wow, this is a miracle. Now, as far as real,
sorry, just to clarify, Oris, not saved from the accident, post accident,
post accident, saved
from the accident, which we need.
Misspoke, Ben. I'm sorry, but what I meant is that help was summoned. But the problem is, and this is where I do struggle, because I think the moral compass here is that you should prevent accidents, and that's certainly true. And I think it's much harder, by the way, to get press to acknowledge this. That's human nature. You know, they can't talk about how many people's lives are saved because of their devices already today. But yes, if you can be delivering safety in the form of accident prevention, just like you can deliver health by preventing illness and rather than treating illness. Treating illness gets all the headlines, but preventing illness is boring and stupid. It's like working out and eating well. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear about that. But that's how you save people's lives in reality. So
yes,
yeah, the moral you know, imperative here is for Tim Cook to deliver on preemption. And I think, though, this is, again, maybe it's a little too dreamy, but I do think that having devices that enhance safety, especially for riders, if you enhance the safety of a rider by increasing their awareness and communicating actively with the potential danger, I think that's actually, you know, the best thing you can do as a rider is illuminate yourself. Cover yourself in lights, not just be passive, but be active about broadcasting your presence. That is the most likely thing to help you, you know, in safety. So what the wearables that Apple develops need to communicate effectively. And I think they might do it in a very interesting way. You could do it with Bluetooth, and effectively the driver is going to get a buzzing device or something in the car that says, hey, there's a bicycle right next to you. Haven't you seen it? And that sort of thing, I think, is, but that's the bottom, the sort of the low end, the thing you build with devices, not to make the car say, okay, we're not going to hit drivers or riders. We're not going to hit drivers don't hit riders. You know, that needs to happen too. But I don't think there's only one way to do that. And that's where I'm hopeful.
My sense is that the Apple Vision Pro will become an incredible driving aid. You will wear one while you drive.
I've been saying it for a while, but it's mostly as a helmet. I hope that it develops into a technology for riders, not just drivers.
Sure. I mean, for riders, for sure. But I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, right? Like, I think that, like,
I mean,
one of the
snake backs is such an incredible comment. That's such an incredible comment. We have to step back and just, I love that comment, Oliver. I said the Apple Vision Pro will come to help you drive.
Well, it'll have all the navigation overlaid, and it'll do all the like sensing for like, oh, there's a bike coming up ahead, and it'll do these things. And it will be the thing that like augments your driving if you're a human driver.
I'd be happy to see that. I'd like to see that as well as for the riders. But yes, in heads up display as it is right now already, it's incredible. Everybody who's within earshot of this should try this thing. If not, buy it, but go to this Apple store and try it. It changes how you see things, literally.
And then you've got. I like this last thing here. So if they're wearing the Apple Vision Pro, my question would be: so the iPhone's been around for, you know, quite a long time now. It's a sustaining technology at this point. Why hasn't more been done there, Oliver? Then, like, clearly they know people are holding the phones. I mean, you can go on Faces of Death. Broadcasting and getting killed. Like, why haven't they done more there? They know they've got the camera that's looking out potentially. Sometimes they know a person's driving, even though you say I'm not driving. Like, so why? I'm just guessing. Why would they? Is it going to be because there's more pressure? Because people are going to get in collisions with the AVP on, and you can't take it off. Like, you can say, "Oh, I wasn't on my phone."
I just think because people end up wearing it, and then I think what will happen is they'll just say, like, "Yeah, you can do that." We will just build an easy to function driving headset that like overlays, and during that period, you will not have all the other distractions. You will not have the notifications, because that already happens, right? Like the iPhones, they do that thing. It's like you're driving and it doesn't send you notifications, all that sort of stuff. But this is not like, I mean, it's
out of that so easily is all I mean. And then you get
distracted. I mean, you know, my sense is just that people will end up wanting to have this because it will be a way better way to drive.
Or even more importantly, they'll get a discount on their insurance.
Yes.
Already dash cams do that. If you're a gig driver and you have a dash cam, you're going to get lower insurance. I think it's great. I love dash cams. I love this whole idea of putting stuff in the car, make it better. But I don't know if you need to own the car to do so. And I think that's my issue. It moves too slowly.
Yep. Okay. So I want to wrap this up. One, I appreciate both your time. And again, to both of you and even to myself, I feel like we're questioning Apple a lot here. I have been, and you know, I want to applaud them for everything they do. But I think it's at the same time, this is so important to micro and where micro goes and whether it's safety or whether it's just innovation. So, but I think Horace, ultimately, what a lot of what you're saying is Apple is not abandoning the mobility space at all and maybe conceding the driver concept to technology companies like Waymo, which they were never really necessarily competing against anyway. Increasingly, Apple will own components of the car that they can control, whether that's CarPlay, whether that's Apple Vision Pro screens in front of you, and they'll make that experience so rich that you never abandon it for another type of service. So potentially, you know, ABP points to a world where, you know, Apple is actually gaining share of screen time with a consumer because now you're going to take over the marketing's time as well. Yeah. Maybe you lost that before.
Really what's up for grabs is the 1 hour day. And it seems that it's a huge investment to try to get that. It seems, unless you're going to be focusing on safety, that entertainment value and that informational value probably is hard to justify. But it's such an important place for other reasons, right? We've concluded so.
All right, guys, we'll see you both. Just a little quick plug here for Micromobility Europe in June. Excited to be together, the three of us in person.
Yeah.
In Amsterdam. Shout out to that. And Oliver, I want to give you the last word. Take us out.
Look, guys, it's such a pleasure to be here with you both discussing these things. It's been way too long. Got to do it more often.
All right.
But thanks, everyone, for listening. Great to have you. Yeah. See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.